Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Maker's Grind podcast. I'm Jordan Hawkins, your host, and it's been a few minutes since we've posted an episode. Thank you so much for your patience, but I'm excited to bring you an episode today interviewing my friend, filmmaker Dan Bowen from the Bay Area in San Francisco. Dan is the owner of a company called Matter Video. Really, really awesome video work. He's also a full-time teacher teaching leadership to almost 200 students a year at this high school. And he's a father of three and a husband. And so he has a lot going on in his life. And so overall, I mean, not only all the things that he's doing is fascinating, but he's just a really, really kind soul, a really nice guy. And it's proof to why he is where he is in his career. And he's not looking for an out. I really loved in our conversation today, he's like, hey, people always ask me, when am I going to stop teaching full-time and also having a full-time video business? He said, I love teaching. I'm not looking to be out of it. So in the culture of you've got to work for yourself, you've got to be self-employed, you got to be self-made and avoid the real job, you know, Dan is doing both. And I really love to see that he's just doing his own thing and he's defining what success looks like for him. And I think throughout this conversation, I hope that you're able to think some about that as I did when talking to him. What does success look like for me? Maybe it doesn't fit into the box of what success is for everyone else, but I'm just excited to talk a little bit about work-life balance and just managing all that we have going on in our busy life today and just hearing some of the things and tactics that he does to stay on track and also just to keep a clear head and a clear mind. Let's jump into the conversation with filmmaker Dan Bowen. So you're in Northern California, right?
Yeah, I'm in the Bay Area about, I don't really know how the compass works, but I'm some direction from San Francisco about, I'm like a half hour drive from San Francisco, 20 minutes from Oakland, something like that.
Nice. So tell me the name of your company and what you do. Even
so,
more official question.
Yeah. My company is called Matter Video, and I film primarily weddings. I started off filming just a bunch of different projects, kind of anything that would come my way. And recently I've focused in a little bit more on just weddings, and I'll do a few nonprofit. It's a difficult word to say. It's actually not. nonprofit projects a year. And occasionally we'll do stuff with bands and whatnot. But yeah, for the most part, just film weddings.
And you also teach leadership at a school, right?
I do, yeah. So I was a film and English major, and I actually graduated a couple units short of having a second major officially or a second degree in English, but I'm somewhere in between like a minor and a major. And I started teaching long, like I tried a bunch of different careers after high school. And honestly, I just couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. I was working as a paramedic or as an EMT, as in paramedic school. I was going to be a firefighter and just hated it. But in the midst of all this, I was really interested in film and in English. So I, through a series of events, I got hurt and decided to take some time. Actually, I didn't decide. When I got hurt, I was forced to take some time. I wish the story was really cool how I got hurt, but I was playing basketball against some five-year-old kids. Broke my wrist. so I couldn't pursue the fire thing for a period of time, and it really allowed me to reflect on what I wanted to do and what I was passionate about. And I was really passionate about people. And working with people and having sort of a non-traditional work day. And teaching was always in the back of my mind. So I got my teaching credential, my master's in education, and started teaching English. And in the midst of all this, I was also doing some video stuff. So I was kind of living in both worlds. It became something that I wanted to pursue more. So as of 4 years ago, I stopped teaching English. I only teach leadership, and in California, it's kind of a different, there's different names for my job depending on what high school or you're at in the United States. But basically, it's like an activities director position. I work with like character development, leadership development in high school students, and it's really, really, really cool. I love it. And I also, I don't want to say I do weddings on the side because it's also full time, my film thing, but yeah, I have this duality happening that I really enjoy. I guess I never want to do anything just for money, and no one teaches just for money, I'll tell you that. But no. I just love it, and I get asked actually pretty frequently by people, like, when are you going to stop teaching? When are you going to start, like, when are you going to just do film or whatever? And I don't approach it that way. There's not a part of me that's like, well, when I hit this threshold or hit this certain mark, that's when I'm going to be comfortable to not teach. I really love teaching. I really love the opportunity to work with students and to just, I guess, impact people in that way. And so for me, it's super fulfilling. I'm also someone who I'm like pretty ADD and ADHD and just need that busyness and that chaos, I guess, to a certain extent. And so I wouldn't thrive, I don't think, if I had a really open-ended schedule where I was just filming and kind of had to create my own workflow and day to day. I like the necessity of like waking up at a certain time and knowing I have this day to day job that sort of requires more time and effort out of me than if I was just doing film. So yeah, I love it. And I only want to do the things I'm passionate about. And fortunately, I'm really passionate about a couple things that I have the opportunity to pursue and get paid to do them.
I guess it's interesting to me, like, that you're working, you know, this other job and you enjoy it and you're not really like timetabling when you want to be out of it. And I think maybe the culture today is so like pro do your own thing that it also doesn't show like the negatives of that and like the realities of retirement and, you know, like all these different, like all these different like things with insurance and all the stuff that you have to think about too, you know?
Absolutely. And having that stability is super important. I'm married, I have three kids, and it does take a lot of the fear out of having a job where it can be nebulous day to day with a videography or a photography or any creative type position where you're counting on referrals. You're counting on people to seek you out. And that can be a scary thing, especially when referrals are slow to come and inquiries are not as prevalent. And so I think having, the stability of a job is definitely a pro. Again, going back to what I said earlier, it's not ever the reason I want to do it, or I never want that to be my primary reason. However, it is definitely something that I'm grateful for, that I have healthcare and I have the retirement and things like that. Those are things that I naturally just don't think about. I'm not super career oriented, so it's sort of ironic in that sense, but right. I'm definitely grateful that it's definitely a peace of mind for my family. Absolutely.
Because I think about sometimes, you know, like I have pretty low living expenses right now. I'm single. My rent is fairly cheap. And I think about like wanting to move or wanting to do these different things. And I'm like, when I think about the end of the day, it's like, I really just like being able to say no to things that are like so far off from like
for sure
what I'm trying to do, that I can say no to that like random inquiry that I get that if I was living like above my means, I probably wouldn't be able to say no to, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think living in the Bay Area, especially, it's so expensive, and most of the people, it's very difficult to even afford a house or a place to rent here. So it's definitely a blessing to have two things that I have two jobs, and I hope I never take that for granted. And also, something I try and do is I never want my students to think that they're like the second thing I'm passionate about, or that it's not a priority to me. And so I shouldn't say rarely. I'll talk about videography and I'll talk about my passion with students, but it's never like, I hope it never comes across in the sense that that's the thing I care about and you guys are the thing I'm just doing to pay the bills or whatever, and vice versa. I think that I never want my clients on the film side of things to think that I'm a hobbyist who's just like, oh, in my spare time, look, I'm going to film this thing this weekend. I would say most of my clients on the film side don't actually know that I teach, and I don't often talk about it. And it's not that I'm obviously ashamed of it or anything. I want people, whatever context and whatever area I'm in, I want them to think that, because it's true, I want them to realize or know that this is the thing I care about right now, and this is the thing I'm going to put all my time, effort, and energy in. And I don't think one of the big things with creatives, and that's a word I don't really love to use, because I think it implies that there are certain type of people who are like inherently creative and others who aren't. And I think there are people who are creative in certain ways. I'm going on a rant. Anyway,
I got you.
But I do think there is a tendency in our culture, and especially in the arts, to have your identity wrapped up in your craft. So I think I get I don't want to say annoyed. I just think it's funny, even the semantics of like, I'm a filmmaker versus a videographer or whatever. Like
cinematographer, yeah.
Cinematographer. There's the whole rabbit trail of these words. And I for me, I just don't ever want to get caught up in the identity of what I'm doing. I never want what I'm doing to define who I am necessarily. I want to be defined by all of these other things. Someone who loves people, someone who loves being creative, someone who loves pursuing, I don't know, someone who I guess simply just genuinely cares about people. And I do that in a bunch of different ways. I do that through film. I do that through teaching. I do that hopefully through my interactions with people when I'm not working. So I think we can get really tied up with, like, going back to what you said earlier, the idea of culture today being like, I work for myself, I'm self-made, I'm a creative, I'm a photographer, I have this social media account that is really well curated, and we can get so wrapped up in these things that ultimately can be, I think, pretty superficial. And mm-hmm. I definitely struggle with that, but I more and more in recent years have tried to really be rooted in the idea that I'm not these things, that I want to be known as someone who really loves people, loves my family, loves God. It's not about this other stuff, if that makes sense.
I love that. And I think for me, when I started actually really pursuing my business, I felt like my Instagram feed like took a step down, like my profile took a step down, because I was like actually thinking of ways to make money. And like sometimes all of those things are not really like you can have a really dope Instagram feed and then not actually be like doing anything as a business, like, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. And the other way around, some of my favorite wedding videographers and wedding photographers don't have these crazy Instagram accounts and don't have these crazy social media followings. And some of the, I have some friends and some people I know who literally have hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, and they're barely scraping by on the financial side of things. So I think depending on how you define success, I don't think the correlation is always as strong as people think. Like, yeah, Oh, that guy's killing it because he has this many followers, or she's doing whatever. I think that that's a difficult thing to chase because it can be really misleading. And I struggle with that, absolutely.
Same, for sure. It's a balance. I mean, for you, I was going to ask you this. How did you find that like place where you're making money and also doing something that you love? But there's also those times, because I'm in that field too, where we go like, okay, like, this isn't like, I'm not loving this right at this moment. Like, this is a lot of work.
The way I found that was, what are the things I like to do? And honestly, I can kind of have fun doing anything if it involves those simple things that I enjoy, which is variety and kind of learning about people and getting to know and meet different people. And teaching and videography really lend themselves to both those things.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to something I've thought a lot about recently, which is, in any field of creativity, are you creating, especially if you're in a client service business, are you creating what you're creating for the client or for other creatives? And, you know,
right.
Like,
and that's a slippery slope too.
It is. Like, because I found myself like probably last year going into this, like, I was slow turning around edits. I was like doing all this extra work, and I'm like, who am I trying to impress with this? Like, you know, not that I'm trying to not make it the best for the client, but it's like, okay, we're not posting things. And you could relate it to clients or to even Instagram followers, like people not posting certain things because, or if it doesn't get a certain amount of likes, like deleting it and basing your whole creativity and art, you know, life as an artist based upon the reaction you're going to get. And so, you know, if other filmmakers aren't oohing and aahing at every film you make, but your clients are like crying and happy, I think,
yeah,
I've had to bring myself back to that place, you know,
and that's a hard place to get back to. And I have to do that almost weekly. Like when I'm doing an edit or I post an edit, that inclination to like, oh, I want to post this to this Facebook group or whatever to see what other people think about it. What I'm really trying to do is to get compliments from other people. Yeah. I don't know if you've done it, but just there's so many trolls out there. There's so many people who are just want to, especially peers in this industry. We're really quick to poop on each other. So that's a definite struggle I have where I'm like, oh, I want validation. But again, yeah, going back to what you said, the validation is the text message I get from the couple or the text I get from the client or the email saying, man, thank you so much. This is something we're going to treasure. That in reality is so much more important than some other videographer saying, I really liked your color grade in that or whatever.
And you have that shot at that, like the mom and the daughter are crying, you know, putting on her dress, but yet the lighting's not perfect. And and so you're like, you know, another filmmaker
which is
might
something
judge
only
you for
you'll
that
notice.
Shot. Yeah. But another filmmaker might judge that shot, but like to them, that's such an important moment. And so I think that's the whole balance of, if you are a business, having that understanding of like, I'm a creative, I'm an artist, but like, I'm also a business, and my client's happiness and their like approval of it is really like what I should be basing it off of. And I'm the same way. I have to bring myself back to that place. Since you are balancing a lot, like with family and two jobs and your own personal life and goals and stuff too. So like, what are some like day-to-day things that you would give, you know, people as far as like staying task oriented, staying on top of things? Cause you're really good at returning your edits fast. I don't know if you've always been good at that, but you are good at that. I watch you do it. You're like, oh, here's this film from yesterday, you know? And what are some things that you do? I know like obviously you're editing early at Starbucks and things like that. I mean, how do you get away? Like, how do you pull back when you've got kids and family and two jobs and like, you've got to find some sort of place to be able to create, you know, these edits, you know?
So for me, it's been a definite learning curve. And I would say, and hopefully, I mean, I could grab my wife. She could hopefully attest to this, but I'm definitely better at this today than I was a year ago and probably better than it was a year before that and definitely better than it was 5 years ago. So I think it's a learning curve. And fortunately for me, I have a very loving and understanding wife. And so I have three kids, like you mentioned, someone mentioned.
Somebody said you had kids.
All of you listeners can tell us who mentioned. Yes. But anyway, I have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 3-year-old. We had kids pretty young. And I remember it was probably like 5-6 years ago. And my son, who's 10, he was probably like 5. And we asked him like what daddy enjoys doing or something along those lines. And his response was like, daddy likes going places or something. And for me, that was a huge wake up call. Cause I didn't want my kids' childhood. Nobody wants their kids to recall their childhood with, oh yeah, my dad likes going places. And, for me, that was, among many other things, a wake up call. It wasn't the only one, but there were several, but it was one of those things where this is my goal and my priority. I couldn't care. I need to not care about the approval of others. What I need to care about is putting my kids and my wife first. And all this other stuff like can come and go. And I need to make them a priority. So that started just me having to develop patterns around that. Like I want my kids to remember summer as being a time where we did a lot of fun stuff as a family, not a time where I was shooting weddings all the time and editing all the time. So as far as day-to-day routine, like today, for example, I got up at 6, went to a coffee shop and edited for 3 hours. And it's not ideal. I don't love getting up early to do that, but that's my morning schedule is during the summer, Monday through Friday, I get up around 6, go edit for a few hours, come home. And when I'm home, mainly out of necessity, I don't edit. Like if I tried to edit at home, mm-hmm. it would just, my kids wouldn't, the edits would be horrible. So building that routine and building my edit times into a time that's not necessarily convenient for me, but that's going to prioritize my family. So for me, that's early mornings. And sometimes it used to be late nights, but I also have found that it's important. Like nights are the time when my kids are in bed, and that's the time for my wife and I to hang out. So I don't really edit at night anymore. So early mornings, that's the first answer as far as edits. For me, has been super, super helpful. And I think there is something important about having a set time and location for editing. If you have an office, great. If you have a place that you just go to, and to try and set clear boundaries with that. Like, this is where I edit. This is the time I edit.
You run and stuff too, right? Not to change the subject, but.
Yeah. No, that was the second part. So for me, just as far as like mental health goes, the two things I do a lot is I try and run like 4 or 5 days a week. And exercise for me is something that is just important for mental health. Like I exercise regularly just to not only to stay in shape, but just so I can, it's like that, it's that 45 minutes a day or an hour a day where I don't have to think about anything else. I don't have to edit. My brain is pretty ADHD, so I'm constantly thinking. I usually listen to like an audiobook and go run. So second thing is exercise. Third thing would be, I read a lot, and that's something that I used to read all the time, and then I stopped for about 10 years for whatever reason. And then about 2 years ago, I was like, I really need to start reading again. And it was almost like a New Year's resolution type thing that I've never really done one of those and stuck with it, but I did. And so, I try and read a couple books a month, sometimes more, sometimes less. And it's not just, and they're like kind of across the board in different genres. I read a lot of fantasy, sci-fi, and we'll read like, business type books, and I try and read leadership books just for my leadership class. So reading for me has been super beneficial, not just for like learning or whatever, but I think just as a mental escape and just to learn and things like that. I think I said not for learning, but then I ended up.
No, so, I totally get it.
I think reading like. I has replaced a lot of the time I was spending on like social media or listening to music or whatever.
In this part of our talk, I want to jump to Dan talking about the difference between being perfect and being good.
I don't know who said the quote, and I don't know the exact wording of it, but it's essentially that perfection is the enemy of good or something like that. And I think if I'm seeking perfection in my edits, they're going to take forever. But if I want to tell a really good story, I can definitely do that. And like, I can do that in a timely manner. And I found with my clients, they'd rather get their really good, like powerful storytelling, like video faster than this film that maybe has this color nuance that honestly only I will notice like months later. So they'd rather have that quick video. In the same way, I'd rather have a second shooter who's just really good with people than someone who's this perfect filmmaker. And I think that honestly has de-stressed me in almost all aspects of my life. If I'm trying to be perfect, I'm gonna be really frustrating not only to myself but to other people. But if I'm trying to be excellent, then I can definitely pursue that. And I think for me, that's been super helpful.
I love that you relayed that to life. It's like, you know, controlling the things you can control and then kind of reacting to everything else, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. There's this book called The Advantage, and it talks about it's a business book, and it talks about aspirational values versus core values. And sometimes we mix them up, and basically in short, it's core values are those things that regardless, they're going to be important to us. And there's achievable goals. So prioritizing people, or just being kind to people, things like that, these core values, then aspirational values are those things that we want to do really well. And those are the things that you strive for and we'll probably never achieve. So I think it's important to have aspirational values, like to make an incredible wedding film is an aspirational value. But sometimes like there are lighting issues and sometimes there are audio issues and things that environmentally maybe you can't control, but the things you can control are those core values, those ways you approach people and the way you approach your day and the way you approach just how you carry yourself. So for me, that's been also an important just mindset going into not only business, but life.
I want to skip to a part in the conversation where I talk about how I first came across Dan's work and what it meant to me and my business at the time. So for me, that was when I first saw your work, I was like, whoa, like, okay, maybe I can do this. And so then I reached out to you, emailed you, and you sent me back, like, I was like, is he even going to email me back? You sent me back this long page of like, It was literally answering all of my questions in like the longest page I'd ever seen. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he replied all this. Then he made it a blog post. So it's like quality business guy doubling his advice and making it into a blog post. Just the only way to do it. Maximizing that time. But I did appreciate that, and I still do appreciate that. It was like a huge defining moment for me, like getting all that advice back and just being able to implement it.
My daughter actually wrote it.
My daughter wrote it.
She's my intern.
Yeah. But no, it was cool. Like, I think you have a heart for people, you know, that you're working for, but also you have a heart for other creatives and other people in the industry. And it meant a lot to me that you replied. And so we've been friends and Insta friends and stuff. But I think that's something that I've tried to learn a lot more recently, is just being more open-handed with my business and with my life and with my creativity, and that like there's not these super secrets out there that we're all going to just become super competitive with each other. And obviously you're on in California, I'm in South Carolina. So, you know, we're definitely not, we're not even remotely in the same area, but I still think there's this whole, you know, it's out for me. I've got to get what's mine, you know, this whole business kind of thing. And that's just so unattractive to me. But anyways, I found that nothing but good has come from learning from people that were ahead of me and reaching out and being open. And so, yeah, I would say I'm curious if you're talking to people now, like that are starting out in their creative business or, you know, artistic field, what advice would you give them? And, you know, what makes you want to be like that? Like, why do you want to? Obviously you teach leadership and you teach kids, so you have a big heart, but you know, why do you feel the need to reply to things or be a part of someone else's growth?
Yeah. I think I'll answer the first question or the second question first. The thing that makes me want to be a part of it is I wish I had someone in the beginning when I was starting who did answer those questions for me. And honestly, early on, I just didn't even know probably even the right questions to ask. But even simple things like how to make a contract, or what's the process for booking a client? How do you back up your footage? Like just these simple logistical things that are the minutiae of the business that isn't glamorous are the things that like you don't get a really, really dope Instagram post on making a contract. You know what I mean? And so those were some of the questions I wanted to ask early. And honestly, I kind of had to start from scratch and create a lot of the answers to these questions on my own. And there was a lot of trial and error involved. I made a lot of mistakes. And I think that as I started getting questions from people, like I had a buddy who was starting out and he's like, hey, do you have a copy of a contract? I definitely, to be honest with you, had that reluctance of like, I had to work hard. I created this
same
thing,
here,
but
yes.
That being said, I sent him that contract, and for me, that was the beginning of me just understanding that it's not like if I'm going to be a jerk, then I'm not going to get very far. Because regardless of the field, you're going to need to depend on people, and being kind to people can take you really far. So for me, my recommendation, I think, now to people would be to be really open with knowledge and information. You might think you're the most original person in the world, but you're probably not. And what you've done has probably been done before. The song you've used has been used before. And I think anyone who's super proprietary with their knowledge, it can be a really isolating thing. And I know for me, especially in the Bay Area, there's a couple of videographers who I recommend regularly, and they recommend me regularly. I rarely, if I'm booked on a wedding day, and there's like a couple dates this year where I had like literally just a crazy amount of inquiries, and I always want to be able to recommend people to other people. And honestly, that was another early challenge for me too, is like, well, if I recommend them, then the venue might see their work and start referring them to people. And I hesitated early on, but I'm very like, Gmail has these like canned responses. I don't know if you've used those before. I'd recommend it.
I need to. Yeah.
You basically pre-draft emails. And so I have a pre-drafted email when I'm booked to send like, hey, I'm unavailable, but check these people out. They're CC'd, and I'll just CC them on the email. And fortunately for me, I booked a really fun wedding this year in Kauai. And that was from a referral from another videographer who I also send work to. So I think that the more, and I think Kaylin and Christine do a really good job of this, of sharing and recommending clients and things like that. Like I just think you can't be successful in this industry today, I don't think, if you are trying to go it alone and burning bridges. Like, eventually it'll bite you in the butt somehow. And maybe it won't bite you in the butt in a very apparent way, but I think the amount of success you could achieve and the amount of even just financial success you could achieve will be much greater, and hopefully people will be open with me and to not expect anything in return. I have fortunately had people who have taught me a lot, but I never want to refer someone. I don't do like referral bonuses or anything like that, because I want people to be free with me, and I'm going to be free with people. I'm not like hating on referral bonuses. I don't want this quid pro quo type of approach.
I love that. And I think Christy and Kaylin modeled that for me a lot, because I did a few workshops with them, and they're getting a lot of inquiries in different locations. So they sent me a few inquiries in the Southeast, and I'm like, I mean, it was honestly, I was sitting there and I would ask myself, like, why? I'm like, why are they sending me work? I was so like foreign to the concept that it was like mind blowing to me. It's like someone else is sending me video work. What the heck's going on? And so that was modeled for me. And I began to do that in my own market. And it just, like you said, it comes back to you. You end up getting that work back, and you're not expecting it, but if it comes back, it does always come back in some form. And I think what you're doing is doing the very thing you've talked about, which is valuing the client and not saying, see ya, hope you find a videographer. But like, hey, I know you valued me and my work. I know you loved my brand and loved what I was doing. And I hate that I'm booked, but now I can like still try my best to take care of you in some way. And I think people are just very lost when they might know like one or two video companies and they were really set on booking you. So it could be a disappointing thing too. And there's just, back to what you said, there's so much freaking work out there. It's so crazy to even think about. Like, you never have to leave like Northern California, and like, you obviously have figured that out, but like, you don't have to leave if you don't want to. Like, there's plenty to do. And even in South Carolina, it's insane. Like, the market is wide open. And so I feel like the quality gap in video compared to photography is, you know, there's just a huge gap between like what's good and just what's not good with wedding videography. So if you're in that good realm or even great, it's like,
and that gap honestly is going to narrow just like it did in photography. And I think the thing that is going to stand out is, as it becomes more blurry between like good and very good, I think that the way you treat people is going to be that defining factor. And for me, like most of our referrals come from, I should say most of our bookings, like at least half, come from photographers that who've recommended us, or other videographers, or a venue. It's very rarely, or I'd say it's less than half are just from a straight Google search or Instagram or whatever. It's honestly the relationships we've developed with people saying, oh, Dan, Tony, Dan Travis, Dan Johnny, whatever, are good folks, and you'll want to work with them because they're just easy to be around. So I think that's the thing, like, rather than, oh, they're really competitive and they kind of have an ego and they're hard to work with, I think it's a way that I think people get lost early on.
For sure. I have a friend, Caleb, who shoots and edits with me some, and he's like, oh my gosh, you're following Matter Video. How do you know them? They did all these edits for Mute Math. And he's like a crazy Mute Math fan. So I was going to ask you about that and like how you've kind of started to shoot a little bit of music stuff and like what that's been like and how that's come about.
Yeah, so I don't do this as much anymore, but I am the king of like cold calling bands, or I'll say cold emailing. I've done like, I don't want to say stalking, but I'll find a band who I like. I'll find out if they're coming to town, and I'll email their label. I'll find out who their manager is, and basically say like, hey, I would love to create something for you, no strings attached. So anyway, I've done that with a bunch of bands, and I've actually been shocked at the caliber, the level of some bands and artists who have responded to me, and it hasn't always worked out. But even when I had a really small music portfolio, I would get people, totally. But anyway, with Mute Math, they were coming to the city, San Francisco, and I was going to the show anyway, and I was like, I basically sent that email. Manager responded, and they were in between album cycles, and they're like, we'd love some content. And honestly, I think they had very low expectations. And I created basically a short documentary for them, and it was like really on the fly, really run and gun. And I was really happy with how it came out, and they were as well. And they actually ended up like I kind of repurposed the thing for them and did their whole social media campaign when their Vitals record came out. And after that, they asked me to, they did a music video for Monument, and they asked me to edit it. And I was just, basically the turnaround time was crazy, and I couldn't do it. It was like, it was right around Christmas, and going back to the most difficult thing I've learned to do over the years is to say no.
Yeah.
And this is a band I've loved forever, and they asked me to edit a music video for a song I really liked, and I was like, I can't do it. And I thought, honestly, I'd burn that bridge, and I was really discouraged about it. But I didn't burn the bridge. And I think for me, there was a lesson there that, no isn't always like a final no. Sometimes it is, but, it's okay to have boundaries, and it's okay to say, hey, around Christmas time, like, cause that would have required a lot of time away from my family. And I said, no. Anyway, then as they prepped for their new record, I got to fly out to Nashville and film them recording it, which was really, really cool. And then going back to this friend's working with my friends thing, they came to me, and this is like the first paid thing. They said, hey, here's your budget. We'll fly out whoever you need. And they had this vision for this basically live recording that they wanted to do. And so I got to fly with three of my friends, four of us. They flew us out to New Orleans to film for 4 days.
Nice.
We also shot a full documentary for them. And it was really, honestly, as far as like from a music standpoint, it was a dream come true. I really loved the band, and it was fun to help tell their story. Obviously, I don't know if you know much about what happened with the band after. It's just things kind of fell apart in the midst of that. And so I had this documentary that I have a lot of content, honestly, that the world has never seen.
Yeah.
And I poured a lot of time, effort, heart, soul. Like, I was literally waking up at 5 a.m. Before I would go teach, and I would go edit for 2 hours, just so I could get these edits done for them in time for the album cycle rollout. And then, the band kind of fell apart. So, it was really a bummer, because I have this, like, I have a rough cut of a 40-minute documentary. I have like all these music videos. I have all this content that I can't use. So that was a bummer. But I think for me, just going back to the idea of the experience, if my goal, if my expectation was to get famous from this, or to get like to shoot some like, I don't know, big time like music video, and I don't know. I think that would be I'd be really, really discouraged. And I was still discouraged, but experientially, and just being able to invest that time with my friends, like, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
And I think you're living proof that you can do a lot of different things with what you love, and not have to nail down into like, just this is all I do, and not to down the person that does that. But I think it's cool to like mix it up and do things here and there. So I wanted to end with this question. You know, you obviously teach leadership to students, and I've seen you like post about this some, but just like political climate's crazy, world's crazy, a lot of stuff's going on. Like, where's your heart for, like, you know, you're investing in a class of students at a school, and like, that's, I love that. And I guess my thoughts are like, what are things that you tell them, or what are things that you think people can learn from about, I don't want to be too vague, but about our world, and about like, obviously loving people is important, but I think I'm just curious, to someone who teaches leadership to students in a climate like today, what are things that you really like nail down on? And like, I mean, we can all definitely learn from that in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it honestly boils down to a lot of what we said earlier. I try and bring in a guest speaker every month. And, fortunately I have some fun contacts who've been able to come in. And I think the underlying message of pretty much everyone who has spoken is I guess my goal and what I try and convey is the same thing, same message in the people that I try and bring in. And it's that I think life is pretty hard, and I think we downplay that. But that our circumstances and our environment shouldn't be the things that determine a person's character, and shouldn't be determine how a person treats other people. They definitely can impact those things, and they definitely. I'm not downplaying how someone's been treated and how that might impact the way they treat other people. But I think often we just kind of see it as a foregone conclusion that because my life's been hard, like this is what life's going to look like from here on out. So I think for me, the thing I try to convey to my students is that you can choose the way you're going to treat people. You can, and honestly, if you're going to let your circumstances or let people's impression of you determine how you feel about yourself, and this is so much easier said than done, you're going to have a very difficult life. If you're going to have this very specific career mindset, and I teach at a very academic high school in a very competitive part of America.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really easy for kids to get their sights set on like, this is the type of job, this is the X amount of money I need to make. And if I don't hit these benchmarks, then I'm going to be a failure. And I think that having them hopefully have their identity rooted in something that's different than how much money they're making and different than this a career or whatever. And I think that I'm not pessimistic about our future based on today's kids. I think that I sounded so old when I said that. I feel like students, my students are some of the most empathetic people I know, and they're some of the most caring people I know, and they're having to navigate a world that is unlike any previous world, just in terms of connectivity and technology and all these things. And but I think regardless, I think the way they treat people is still going to be so important, that some of the most successful people I know by really any metric are also some of the kindest people. And that's how, honestly, to a great extent, they've been able to achieve what they've achieved. So I think that's the thing that I think gets lost sometimes in education is, and I'm super cynical about education, not education as a whole, but like public education. And I think like I want to be part of the solution, which is why I'm teaching. But I think that the system of public education can be really quantitative, like what your grades are, what test scores or whatever. And so for me, I think the qualitative stuff's so important, like how you treat others, these things that can't necessarily be measured, but you know when they're present. So anyway, I think that I love teaching. I love teaching leadership. I have 200 kids each year that I get to know, and some of them I've known for like 4 or 5 years, and June's a really weird time because they graduate and I'm like, I've known these kids have been part of my life, probably aside from my wife and kids and close friends, I've spent more time with them than anyone. And I think that it's been a blessing in a lot of ways, and it's encouraging and it's challenging. It's all these cliche words, but I think the thing I hopefully leave them with when they graduate is that find out what you're passionate about, but keep finding it out, and it's okay to not figure it out. It's because I still don't have it figured out. I'm still figuring things out. That life is continually just a pursuit of learning and growing, and it's okay to screw up along the way, so long as you continue to learn and grow from it and to treat people well along the way, I think is like my overall, hopefully that how they would define the impact I've left, I guess.
Yeah, and I love that. I think you're proof to this, but it's, you know, shooting with mute math and spent, you know, posting these awesome family vacation videos and having all these connections with wedding videographers and other people in the industry and like just so many cool connections. Like there's it's just proof that there's not bad things that are going to come of like treating people well and like being nice, you know, like being open is not going to lead you to a bad place. You don't really know where it's going to lead you, but it's
for
not
sure,
going to be bad,
sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I'm grateful, like I said, that there are other people. There are plenty of other people like that. And I think that hopefully the people who are shining in this industry are the people who are treating, who are more open and sharing. And I think I've seen that. And I think for me, like I don't ever want my identity to be like Dan's a wedding filmmaker or Dan's this or whatever. I just want like Dan cares about people. And and again, going back to what my son said when he was 5, like I think if you asked him that, we could go grab him. But I think if you asked him that now, I he would say a number of things, but he definitely wouldn't say Dad likes going places or whatever. I think he would say Dad likes hanging out with me, or Dad likes watching me skateboard, or Dad likes going places with me. And I think like a closing thing for anyone just starting out, or maybe people have been in it for a while, like, I think figure out what is really important to you and make sure that is the priority. And I think that was a difficult thing for me early on, that it was backwards for me. And so I think that what is really important to me is my family and my faith and the relationships with my friends. And and there might be days obviously where other things get in the way of that, but I never want an extended period of time to have things flip-flopped. And when things might be flip-flopped, to have people in my life who can speak to that. Like, hey, Dan, like you're kind of getting in your own head, or your things are off. And fortunately I have those people, and I get to shoot with those people and live with those people. So I'm grateful to have that for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's taking that, nothing wrong with reaching out for advice, because I've done it more than anyone, but it's taking that advice and like ingesting it and then thinking, is this for me? Not just saying I have to take what Dan does exactly in order to be successful, you know, like ingesting it and saying, does this apply to me and my market with the brides that I have or the clients that I have? And I think nothing wrong with getting a lot of stuff into your brain, but then it's like sorting it and deciding, is it for me, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And just being authentic. Like, I think that's huge. That, yeah, don't do what I do and I won't do what you do. And if everyone tried to be other people, like it would come off disingenuous. I think being real is so important. And, I think it's going to look different for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being on, and I'm super excited to see what all you keep doing, and hopefully we'll actually meet one day if I ever make it to Northern California.
Yeah, I want to go to South Carolina. Don't come my way. I'll go your way.
You can come this way, but I'm just like, I have this view of San Francisco just thinking it's going to be the coolest place ever. So don't spoil it.
It's pretty awesome. Great coffee. You have water. You have bread. I mean, that's really all you need. Bread, water, and coffee.
Coffee, yeah, exactly. The hipster survival guide.
Oh, man, that's essentially it, yeah.
Thank you guys for listening, and a special thanks to Dan for taking the time to talk with us today. If you're interested in seeing more of his work, you can visit mattervideo.com or at mattervideo on Instagram. As always, you can subscribe or review our podcast, as well as share it with a friend or someone that you may think may find value from it. I always appreciate you guys sharing this as well as feedback. So if you have anything you'd like me to know or have any questions, you can send me an email at jordan@jordanvisuals.com or an Instagram DM at @jordan_visuals. I'd love to learn what you have been taking away from the podcast, as well as ways that we might can improve. Thanks again for listening. Go out there and create. You might surprise yourself with what you can accomplish.